Radio Indiana, WIBC, Indianapolis.
That Mel was transported to an area hospital where he later died from his injuries.
The victims are a 2- and a 5-year-old female.
I just switched the violence and stopped, man. That's all it is. Switched and stopped. That's all I need to do. There's too many guns out on the streets.
This is for the kids who die, black and white. For kids will die, certainly. The old and rich will live on a while. As always, eating blood and gold, letting kids die. Langston Hughes.
My family's been losing members left and right. My 13-year-old cousins died. My family lives with that.
6 people had got shot down there in that area.
This is an outrageous act of violence in our city.
Don't want to listen to my telephone ring or sing, ding-a-ling, or talk about it.
Oh, my God.
Fire and ambulance. What's the address?
Oh, my God.
Slow down, kid. Slow down. Could you be on the phone?
From gun violence, Indianapolis. You know what I'm saying?
But it's too late now.
3 males and 1 female.
It's too late now.
Did he try to rob her?
Yeah, he's got a BS rifle,
it's too
man.
Late now.
Few words can be said to truly help the people of Indianapolis who have lost people to gunshots or the blade of a knife. Yet words are demanded.
The level of gun violence is unacceptable.
Words to tell everyone else it will be all right, even as the violence in the streets mounts and breaks records.
Men and women of the IMPD are responsible for the safety of the citizens.
I can't help them out this morning.
This city.
You are about to hear how the violence affects you.
Am I taking my life in my hands? Walking out of the Lucas Oil Stadium.
You are about to hear the attempts at explanation and what some of the leaders believe might be solutions.
A lot of those kids we already know from the neighborhood.
That's why we have asked continuously, where's the outrage?
What seems to be a lack of outcry or outrage?
Of course we're outraged. But I think the most effective way of addressing that is funneling that into action.
Just like 4620.
You are about to hear the story. That's just like 46201, the story of violent crime in Indianapolis.
Back here in 46201, there's gotta be a few small changes made.
No, it's not just one zip code. You're affected by the crime in Indy no matter where you live, in the metro or in Indiana.
Greenwood and Carmel and Greenfield and Avon, they should be asking themselves, why do I care about this? Here's the answer. It's coming to a neighborhood near you. In fact, it is already there.
If that voice is familiar, or if you think you've heard it before, it's because Indy's Fraternal Order of Police Lodge No. 86 President Rick Snyder has been loud lately about the surge in violent crime over the past year and the steady rise in the number of people murdered and in the number of people who have been shot in non-fatal shootings.
We have already heard from our local surrounding sheriffs and local law enforcement leaders who are outraged about the violence that is spilling over into their communities.
You know, I've been in law enforcement for 30-plus years, and I was a detective with Greenwood for 9 years, on their department for 14.
And it's confirmed by Greenwood Mayor Mark Myers.
And the majority of the people we arrested were not residents. It's always been historical that the majority of our arrests are out of city residents.
So whether you live in Indy proper or anywhere in the surrounding area, you have a stake in this story. And you have a stake in it even if you've never been a victim of violent crime. But if you have been shot or stabbed or beaten, then you know of the incredible physical pain, and beyond that, the emotional and financial horror that haunts the victims of violent crime.
I was shot when I was 16 years old, and because I was running around with knuckleheads back then, and I still have the bullet in my back, and it's next to my spine, and there's days I can't get up out of the bed, so it's a constant reminder that, you know, that lifestyle is not healthy for anybody.
Shauna Majors tells her story. She's now the director of Community Violence Reduction in Indianapolis. And her own experience is part of what fuels her passion for keeping it from happening to anyone else.
If you don't mind sharing, do you remember what that felt like?
Absolutely. It felt like I was punched really hard in the back, and then it felt like electricity. I was being shocked. I didn't know I was shot. I didn't even realize it. I just knew something had happened. And I thought the person that I was with was some kind of weird car alarm for some reason. And I was like, whatever you just did, stop it. Turn it off. It hurts. And I don't even think he realized he shot me. But my brother, my youngest brother, or my younger brother, he heard the gunshot. He ran out and grabbed me and was like, you've been shot. And I didn't realize it till I started coughing and blood was coming out.
Shot in the back, just 16 years old, by a friend who had a gun. Majors was taken to the hospital.
I think that's when the shock set in that I'd been shot and the reality of it and the hyperventilation and all that start happening. So, I remember it. I'll never forget that feeling.
That feeling was experienced by over 500 people last year.
What we're not talking about is the escalation in non-fatal shootings in the city.
Reverend Charles Harrison with the Indy 10-Point Coalition at a news conference at the beginning of 2020.
As of 12/27, we were already at 518 non-fatal shootings compared to the same day of 2018, 489. We are fortunate, based on the number of non-fatal shootings, that we did not break another homicide record and criminal homicide record for the fifth year in a row.
But it wasn't because the crooks weren't trying. In many cases, they either missed their intended target or the life-saving technology at the hospital put a wrench in their plan to kill.
So for the most part, I would say that the homicides have remained consistent. I know we get a lot of non-fatal shootings, and those seem to be a problem.
Officer Jerome Harrison, a veteran patrol officer with IMPD's North District.
So one of the things with the non-fatal shootings is it doesn't just stop there. A lot of times there's retaliation, groups going back and forth. So one of the issues I know that our administration and chief would like to get a hold on is our non-fatal shooting.
Trying to figure out a solution to help stop the violence
coming up
in the communities.
What is so vital about finding a way to stop both murders and non-fatal shootings?
The police are one of many actors in a very complex solution.
You left behind evidence. We will find it.
And how the motivation to kill has changed in Indianapolis.
Number two, when you're ready. First name, Amanda, A-M-A-N-D-A.
You're listening to The Story of Violent Crime in Indy on 93 WIBC.
I'm the man, ain't been one since 12 years old, collecting cans, cutting grass, and shoveling the snow. When I was 13, I bought a scale and started selling smoke. When I was 14, I bought a pistol, let that be.
You're listening to Just Like 46201, The Story of Violent Crime in Indy.
Indianapolis, like other major cities, is accustomed to violence. Crime is a commonplace, everyday occurrence. And to a reporter, the coverage of these stories is also commonplace.
The motives and number of murders and violent crimes in Indianapolis have both changed over the years. Like other large cities, Indy had an increase in murders in the 1980s, fueled by drugs. But before that, the city had a history of killings motivated by robbery, rape, jealousy, and greed. You're about to get a history of murder in Indy to help understand the differences and similarities between then and now. In downtown Indianapolis, there once stood the Claypool Hotel, a high-end place to stay that attracted celebrities and regular folks, including Corporal Mayoma Ridings, who was stationed at Camp Atterbury during World War II. She had come to Indy for a date and was found murdered in her room at the Claypool, killed with a broken whiskey bottle. 11 years later, Dorothy Poor, who was from Clinton, Indiana, and was just 18, was found murdered and stuffed into a dresser drawer in the same hotel. The murders partly led to the downfall of the massive hotel, which was eventually knocked down to make room for new properties. The Embassy Suites Hotel now stands there. Ridings' murder is still unsolved.
All I did was write that thing on her stomach, and then I hit her about 10 or 15 times.
But how come?
Well, most because Gertie told me to.
The murder of Sylvia Likens, 16 years old, by Gertrude Banachewski. at a home on New York Street, October 26, 1965.
Did you ever use any hot irons on her?
No. Yeah, that three in her stomach, I did half of that.
Well, how about the inscription on there, I'm a prostitute and proud of it. Who put that on?
I did.
Likens, who was left in Banachewski's care by her parents, was brutalized by some of the other children living in the house and eventually died from the abuse.
I did never beat that girl. Never.
Banachewski went to prison for nearly 20 years.
She was beat up on by other girls. In fact, my own daughter socked her in the jaw and broke her wrist.
Our neighborhood just as good as any small town we can live in. I don't know where this guy come from.
The murder of Jerry Bales.
I wouldn't move from here on account of this. I wouldn't feel any safer in a small town.
Bales was 10 years old when he was killed in his neighborhood on Indy's west side, October 3rd, 1970. He was stabbed to death.
What are they doing because of that? I mean, are they taking any extra precautions? People getting guns or anything like that?
No, not that I know of, no.
Bales' killer was never caught.
Three men were found murdered at the house at 1318 North LaSalle Street on the city's east side. Detective Pat Stark of the Indianapolis Police Department Homicide Branch.
One subject laying on the bathroom floor on his back with his hands and feet tied with a huge gaping wound in his throat.
The LaSalle Street Murders, December 1st, 1971.
No sure motive has yet been determined, but Stark said that the house was ransacked. Paul Page, WIBC News.
The men were likely ordered killed by their former boss, whose hired goon, Fred Harbison, confessed to the killings in a note left behind in a safe deposit box and found by his daughter after his death.
Indiana State Police were called to a wooded area near State Road 37 and Johnson County Road 700 North Sunday afternoon on the report of bodies in the area.
The Burger Chef murders, the mass killing of four workers at a Burger Chef restaurant in Speedway, November 17, 1978.
Indiana State Police Major Robert Allen took charge of the investigation and said the bodies of 16-year-old Daniel Davis, 17-year-old Ruth Ellen Shelton, 20-year-old Jane Freet, and 16-year-old Mark Flemons were identified as the four who were kidnapped from a Speedway Burger Chef restaurant early Saturday morning.
Those murders have not been solved.
The only thing I noticed is I was inside my store and my body was physically moved about 6 inches to 12 inches back with the force of a blast that took out all my store windows here.
The Speedway bombings of 1978.
A district police officer called IPE dispatch on his radio and said a suspect in custody for killing two women on the 3200 block of Sutherland said he had killed his four children and they were in the basement of his house at 3761 North Graceland.
The mass murder of King Edward Bell's family, August 21st, 1981.
A fireman walked out of the house to the street, sat down on his equipment case, and cried.
King Edward Bell Jr., age 6, Bertina Michelle Bell, age 4, Berkima Rochelle Bell, age 3, and the youngest is Kingston Edward Bell, age 1. All four died of gunshot wounds to the head.
Bell was described as a religious fanatic by homicide captain Tim Foley. Neighbors said he had cut a hole in a ceiling and set up a place for meditation. Paul Casey, WIBC News.
Bell committed suicide in a mental hospital in 1987.
There are some people who create such horrendous crimes that that's the only justifiable punishment is the capital punishment.
Seven people murdered, shot to death on Hamilton Avenue, and three of the bodies discovered just after dusk on June 1st, 2006 were children. The Hamilton Avenue murders have been called collectively the worst mass killing in Indianapolis history. Desmond Turner got life.
Based on what would be admissible at trial, this decision helps to ensure the result that he is convicted and that he's never released from prison to harm another.
His partner, James Stewart, got 421 years. One of the differences is that fewer murders happened in Indianapolis in decades past, so each one of those stories shocked people. The stories have stuck in people's heads and have become an ingrained part of the conscious and subconscious history of the city. As the years have gone by and murders, even mass murders, have happened, the number of murders from just under 150 in 2015 to 154 in 2019 tend to obscure the faces of the people murdered, even when it happens to four people at the same time.
Well, I would be inclined to say good morning, but that doesn't seem appropriate this morning. Though we are still gathering information, it is clear that last night our city experienced incredible tragedy. one fueled by senseless violence.
Homicide investigators and crime lab are processing the scene. They're going to be here for some time.
February 5th, 2020.
The evidence inside, it appears to be as a result of gunshots, but that'll all be determined by the coroner after autopsy.
It happened at an apartment complex off of 42nd and Midhoffer.
What appears to be three males and one female.
But it's what happened just hours before the shooting that has FOP President Rick Snyder livid.
We had a proposal for a commission to bring all the relevant stakeholders around the table to start to combat the violence and push it back. And they rejected it.
The City County Council's Public Safety Committee voted 8-3 to reject a proposal to form a study commission to deep dive into why so much violent crime is happening in Indianapolis. Councilors said it would be redundant to do that and that the committee could handle that duty itself.
51 people killed in 88 days. Now people say, why? What's the 88 days? What's that go back to? It's the weekend immediately following the municipal elections.
Snyder says the council is putting politics ahead of public safety. Kurt Darling, 93 WYBC Mobile News.
Braxton Ford, Kamari Hunt, Marcel Wills, and Jalen Roberts, all between the ages of 19 and 21.
The criminal justice system in our local community is broken. It's taking repeat violent offenders when they are arrested for new alleged acts of violence and cycling them right back out into our neighborhoods.
Rob Connett, 93 WIBC Mobile News.
The way that I'm living, y'all know it ain't right. And I pray I make it home when I ride through the night.
What we are confronted with is a question of who we are as a people.
The morning after the murders.
What we are confronted with are broken hearts and lost souls. Chief.
The men and women of the IMPD are responsible for the safety of the citizens of this city, and we take that very seriously. The tragedy we saw last night, it doesn't make any sense, but we're focused on holding accountable the person or persons that is responsible for this. For an update on the investigation, I will turn it over to Deputy Chief Craig McCart.
We do not believe that this was a random incident. We believe that this was definitely a target incident.
There is no reason for their lives to have been cut short.
And the night after.
This is where we live, but when it hits close to home, it's unbelievable. I still can't believe it. I can't believe she's gone.
If you don't have any hope, if you don't believe that there's any promise, you know, what are we here for?
But during the next week, the surge in violence ramped up. 9 more people died over the next 10 days. Coming up,
there's still purpose even in the midst of all this.
You'll hear what the problems are, why people are being murdered and shot and stabbed, and what answers are being given by the people responsible for keeping you safe.
That some other young person can see this and say, I want to do something different.
You're listening to Just Like 46201. On 93 WIBC.
I know death around the corner. Someday I gotta leave. I'm trying to get it to the day that I'm gone. You know we lived it or we did it. If it's up in my son.
Whatever happened to homes as opposed to houses? Conversation sinks as the evening drowses, and it's just like 46201.
Cops say the shooting was unacceptable. 69 downtown, I'm Ashley Fowler, and here's what's trending at 8:03. 6 people were shot Saturday night, and police are looking for someone they believe fired shots down the street at the intersection of Maryland and Illinois streets at about 11:20 p.m.
September 21st, 2019.
Unacceptable. It's unacceptable for downtown.
Unacceptable as it may be, IMPD had not made any arrests by Sunday morning. That was Officer Janae Cook. All 6 people were taken to the hospital. 2 were critical, and 2 were in serious condition. The other 2 were less seriously hurt. IMPD says they're talking to the victims to find out why the person was shooting and who the person may be.
I had a couple friends who were down in Indianapolis last night, right about the time of the shooting. They were trying to decide if they were going to go to Steak and Shake or Burger Study. I am so glad they chose Burger Study.
Cops refused to call it a mass shooting, but 6 people were shot in front of the downtown Steak and Shake. It was on a busy Saturday night, with families enjoying their evening downtown. And it was in the middle of a political campaign.
We have got an incredible problem. We have a mayor who is hiding up in the city-county building, the 25th floor of the city-county building, ignoring the violence in our city.
Republican State Senator Jim Merritt was running for Mayor Joe Hogsett's job and had already been highly critical of how Hogsett had been handling the violence in Indy.
Mayor Joe thinks that he can handle the police department as his own public safety director. How is that going right now for us?
It's direct and it's immediate. The buck stops at the desk of the mayor, as it should.
Hogsett responded in an interview on WIBC.
The level of gun violence that Indianapolis has experienced, and frankly, most other urban areas throughout the country has experienced, is unacceptable and unprecedented.
Both the shooting and the response to it were unacceptable to some community leaders.
I was very troubled to hear that this had happened again and that, six people had got shot down there in that area.
Reverend Charles Harrison with the Indy 10-Point Coalition the morning after.
Similar to what happened years ago when we had several people shot at one of the expo events. Because we have had a 20-year problem with the downtown area, particularly on Saturday nights where, young people tend to gather.
We busting shots right at your rally against the purge.
But shootings and violence downtown tend to have a genesis somewhere else.
Hey, yo, what's good, world, man? It's your boy, Yo-Yo Escobar. Capture the moment films and all that,
Rapper Yo-Yo Escobar took cameras into some areas of the city that he believes are some of the most crime-ridden for YouTube videos he produced in 2018.
Man, I'm doing this for Indianapolis, Indiana, first and foremost. This is just to shed light and give y'all a little bit of history, behind some of these neighborhoods that we got in the city. And there's a lot of neighborhoods in the city, And I don't think any other blogger, vlogger, media personality person, whatever you want to call it, is documenting this shit. No one's telling the stories behind some of these hoods. And me, I was active in the streets.
Escobar says he was in the streets from 9 years old to 21 when he moved away from Indy. He's now in his 30s.
This neighborhood right here is BTF. BTF stands for Behind the Fairgrounds. It's located behind the Indiana State Fairgrounds in between College and Keystone, basically 40th Street area all the way to 52nd Street. That's a big area.
Some of that area has changed with gentrification, but some of it is still part of gang territory, he says.
Late 90s, early 2000s, so around my era, they was claiming UFG, which means unfair grounds. And then, you had other subsets.
He's describing gang names and hangouts.
You had, I think it was a Hog Fam. You got the Hogs. You had the Lady Hogs. You had 49th and Primrose, 49th and Carrollton, 40th and Guilford, 45th and Kingsley, 43rd and Crennan. It's a lot of streets, man. And basically where everybody hangs out at is Arsenal Park. That's like the big, when we was younger and stuff like that, young. That's where everybody would go hang out, is like Arsenal Park and stuff like that. I'm from Indianapolis, baby. Yeah, I used to ride a bus.
A visit to IMPD's North District Headquarters to talk with veteran patrol officer Jerome Harrison. He's patrolled different neighborhoods on the north side for 17 years, starting with the Butler-Tarkington area in 2003. If you want to know about gangs in Indy from a police perspective, Harrison has seen it all as a patrol officer, as an evidence technician, and even as a minister. His church is on the east side.
When we think of gangs, I normally think of like the Bloods and the Crips and well-known gangs that are in California and also, other gangs in major cities. But our gang culture, I would say, is just a group of young men and sometimes women that get together and just call themselves whatever name that they want to give themselves. But our gang, we do have a gang unit on our department, and they do a phenomenal job at recognizing the gangs, recognizing, what they're up to through social media, Facebook, and other social media apps.
Yes, Indy gangs are on Facebook, Snapchat, Twitter, all of the social apps. And like Officer Harrison says, the cops keep up.
So they do a phenomenal job at trying to de-escalate some of the gang activity here in our city.
Social media disses have been the cause of some heinous crimes in Indy.
An individual got out of whatever mindset and thought it appropriate to fire
at a home and target whomever but a baby girl died this morning.
Sergeant Christopher Wilburn, IMPD, after a one-year-old was killed when someone shot into a house after an incident that started on a social media chat.
This has nothing to do with anything but insane people thinking that it's appropriate, to take out their vendetta, personal issues in an unhealthy manner.
But because gangs and crooks communicate on the platforms like Instagram and Snapchat, police can keep up with the conversations easier.
That's how people communicate now. We're not really in the days of people just calling someone on the phone. A lot of these communications take place over social media.
Marion County Prosecutor Ryan Mears.
And so, when people say, hey, I'm going to this place or I'm going to meet with so-and-so, we're in a position to capture those conversations. And in addition to that, social media also provides kind of an outlet for people to explain what they're doing after the fact. And, anytime you log on to those sites, you are creating a digital footprint, which is helpful for us in trying to help establish where people are located and what they're doing and when they're doing it.
The hood has a lot of history, you know what I'm saying?
Rapper Yo-Yo Escobar talks about the history in some East Side neighborhoods.
From 30th to basically 33rd, you know what I'm saying? From, man, it's a whole little square little area, you know what I'm saying? It's from College of Delaware. They got a lot of history over there. Basically, it was an all-white area in the 50s, 60s, early 70s. By the late 70s, you started seeing neighborhood changes within, color, that is.
He says the area just north and south of 38th on the east side is a pretty tough place to grow up.
A lot of poverty over there, heavy police activity. Gang activity over there, drug activity. It's a known prostitution area. Man, it's just crazy over there, man. So they got a lot of rappers from over there, Lil Nuke, J-Rock, Lil Donald.
And he talks about the culture that demands the keeping and use of weapons.
It is an area where one would have to keep a weapon on them, and stay on your P's and Q's, keep your ears and your eyes open, focus on the shit around you, if you're not from over there, I wouldn't suggest that you go hang over there, it's not that kind of area just to be parlaying and sightseeing.
And that was the last conscious thought that I have.
Coming up,
I woke up 3 days later in the hospital with 13 stab wounds.
The blade and the bullet and different reasons people use them.
That began long before I was the mayor.
And a ride from the hood to the 25th floor of the city county building.
It protects the officers and it protects the public.
You're listening to Just Like 46201, the story of violent crime in Indy on 93 WIBC.
Not all of our young people have those same rights that most of us have.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying.
How can you have the right to life when every day you're worried about your safety and someone else's safety? How can you have liberty when you don't have the basic education to get a job that pulls you out of poverty?
Help us to realize that our city and our nation is in crisis.
And how in the world can you pursue happiness when each and every day you're struggling just to make ends meet, and on most days you fall short?
A crisis of faith. Teach us to walk by faith and not by sight.
A time that requires of us the courage to do what is hard and what is right.
It's not always what we see, but it is what we don't see. Murder, mayhem.
What do you think the main motivator is for violence here in Indianapolis?
We try and keep those statistics, and you look at motives behind all the violence, and the thing that sticks out is narcotics.
Dwayne Lucas and Terrell Redd, officers believe they were the ones who shot and killed Shanita Caffey and Miles Cross while they sat at a red light at the intersection of Lafayette Road and Tibbs.
And I was told that all were in stable condition, all were talking, but none were cooperating with what happened.
There was no reason for us to flee the mall, no reason for us to think anything happened inside of the mall.
They shot Walter Burnell in the chest and
shot Jacob Rodimich in the face, shot Christy Sanchez in the head, and shot Haley Navarra in the neck.
In the last 9 years, we have close to 300 unsolved homicides. I'm frustrated.
Come on, talk to me. You can't see what's going on.
I heard some gunshot, about fast shot. So I woke my wife up. I said, she just come out the bed. I said, you hear it too? I said, I heard it too. And just total chaos. People were screaming. Police was coming everywhere.
Only one person died right there in the parking lot. Another one died at the hospital. Three more people are hurt and still in the hospital. Two of them are critical.
Just a couple miles away, another person shot Friday morning around 4 a.m. Then around 6:30, a third person shot near the state fairgrounds.
And he just started shooting. He unloaded the whole clip into her car.
IMPD said that despite life-saving efforts, one of the women died at the hospital.
But there's a gentleman laid out while the first responders was working on him.
Those most likely to commit or be the victim of gun violence.
CPR, defibrillator, I saw a lot of blood.
Yeah, just the violence has stopped, man. That's all it is. So it's just stopped. That's all I need to do.
What's going on? What's going on? Yeah, what's going on? What's going on? Tell me what's going on. I'll tell you what's going on.
I want to paint an accurate picture, you know, and so I'm wondering, the people in your congregation, the people on your beat, are they generally scared, or are they, you know, they're just people that go about things normally?
The majority of the people, and I would say in our the communities that I patrol, it's a lot of good people there, a lot of people that's been over there for years. I would say 90% of the people in our communities are doing the right thing. They love where they live. They respect the police. They love the police. They like seeing us out there.
So, Officer Jerome Harrison, where does most of the crime come from? Why do people resort to violence?
When you look at a lot of the violent crime, I think drugs are, you know, again, is a major contributor or a major factor into some of the spikes in our homicide. And then it's not only the drugs, but I would say that a lot of people, especially younger people, don't know how to resolve their conflicts. And so the way that they resolve their conflicts is through gun violence. And so when you add the drugs, the lack of self-control, the lack of settling disputes by talking, then it just kind of contributes to the overall factor of the crime. Again, not only in our city, but across the country.
We have really seen an escalation in these interpersonal conflicts that's leading to more and more violence.
Same answer from Reverend Charles Harrison.
But we seem to have less gang violence and more of these interpersonal conflicts. And I think that's what we are facing, and we have to find a way to try to deal with this.
This is what the young people tell me, that you can buy a gun for about $50 on the street. It's easier to find a gun than drugs sometimes out on the street.
Shauna Majors, Director of Community Violence Prevention.
Social media plays a huge role in a lot of what we're seeing played out in the streets.
Heard that one before?
You know, kids are bullying each other on Facebook or Instagram or Snapchat, and it spills out into the street without people sitting down to discuss the differences and walk through a solution, either agree to disagree or, you know, and leave it there. It turns into a dangerous situation a lot of times. So, yeah, some of it is drug related. Some of it is robbery, but a lot of it is lack of being able to resolve the conflict.
And then there's human nature.
If you look at what are the covariates of firearm violence, you're looking at things like people who are trying to navigate living in severe poverty, people that are trying to resolve conflict when they don't have very good resolution skills.
Jeremy Carter, Associate Dean for Research, Director of Criminal Justice and Public Safety at the O'Neill School at IUPUI.
Firearm violence is very much looked at as a public health lens, that it can be contagious based on exposure. So if I see others using firearm violence, I am much more likely to do it myself. If I think that is a community norm, I'm much more likely to engage in those behaviors myself.
We must stop the bleed when it comes to the fractures within our system that is contributing to repeat violent offenders victimizing our community over and over again.
And then there are the ones police put in jail. who are able to get out on a relatively cheap bond.
Those arrested in Marion County on local charges receive an automatic $500 bond for the following felony offenses: battery, criminal confinement, criminal gang activity, criminal recklessness, escape, intimidation, pointing a firearm, residential entry, resisting law enforcement, stalking, and strangulation.
Fraternal Order of Police President Rick Snyder.
Oftentimes, they are then reoffending and victimizing new people in our community, or re-victimizing those that they had perpetrated crimes against already.
Our officers are telling us from the front line, 1,700 police officers, that they are arresting and re-arresting the same violent offenders, and they are committing violence on new victims. That means it is preventable if we intervene. Hold on.
I can't trust anybody that says release and catch. That's not the phrase that you use. You cannot use black and brown people as your platform.
Thank you, sister.
But that's not the whole picture, say some people who live in Hawville, on the west side, and on the far east side.
Here's the deal.
Right now, the issue is poverty. The issue is gentrification. The issue is food deserts. The issue is homelessness. People are sleeping on the street.
We agree. We agree.
Our people that can live, we need actual wages. Y'all do not care about us.
We agree.
I spoke several times about what they need. I didn't see you. Where the hell have you been?
We agree.
At a news conference on community violence at City Market downtown.
This is the outrage we're looking
one
for.
One moment.
The violence in Indianapolis is indeed racially disproportionate, says Reverend Charles Harrison.
And we have to have a real conversation in the black community about what is driving this violence and really what needs to be done to curb the pattern of violence. And it's a tough conversation. One of those factors is certainly the large number of African-American children that are being born into single-parent households where a mother may not have the income to support the number of children that she's having and the abandonment of these children by the father.
And even though the murder rate in Indy at the end of 2019 was slightly below what it was in 2018, a surge of shootings has been followed by pleas from the FOP president, who represents rank-and-file police officers.
Our police officers and our residents are stuck in the middle of this violence, and they needed to see and sense an urgency from trusted voices in our community.
His accusation is that city leaders, at the very least, need to be angry about the killings and the non-fatal shootings.
Where's the outrage?
Coming up.
Of course we're outraged, but I think the most effective way of addressing that is funneling that into action.
An answer from city leaders is not what some people were looking for, and an answer, when mild, turns away rage.
I think one of the first things that needs to happen is a change of a person's heart.
You're listening to Just Like 46201, the story of violent crime in Indy on 93 WIBC.
As I lay me down to sleep, I hear her speak to me. Hello, Maureen. How you doing? I think the storm and out of rain, the clouds are moving.
All kinds of kids will die who don't believe in lies and bribes and contentment and a lousy peace.
These are our children. And if they're not being the victims of the crime, they're definitely the witnesses of the crimes. And there's lifelong impacts.
Of course, the wise and the learned who pen editorials in the papers, and the gentleman with doctor in front of their names, white and black, who make surveys and write books, will live on weaving words to smother the kids who die.
You're listening to Just Like 46201, the story of violent crime in Indy.
And sometimes we are cutting lives short or critically injuring and causing lifelong injuries. The science shows it that when our children are witnessing violence, they have a significantly higher propensity to then commit violence later in life.
I talked to God about you.
He said he sent you an angel, and look at all that he gave you. You asked for one and you got two.
Mm-hmm. In your opinion, has it gotten worse, or is it going up and down? Is it going cycles?
In my opinion, I would say one of the biggest changes from when I first came on is that you always have crime and you always have violent crime, but now it seems like the ages have dropped. Younger ages and younger kids. So, for example, used to be 18, 19 criminals older that was doing crime, but now you're seeing 12, 13, and 14-year-old involved in a violent crime.
How do you deal with someone who wants to kill? What can you say to someone who has a gun or a knife, whether they should or shouldn't have it, who may use that weapon on another person?
What do you think the solution is to this kind of surge that we're having?
So besides being a police officer, I'm also a full-time pastor, also pastor church here in the city of Indianapolis. And my church is 32nd and Sherman. We're in the 46218 zip code, which we know that the 46218 zip code has its challenges. And so one of the things that I would say is that you have to change people's hearts. And if you don't change a person's heart, then they'll continue to doing the things that they're doing.
Officer Jerome Harrison, IMPD North District.
I also believe that, it starts with parenting. The police can do so much, teachers can do so much, coaches can do so much, but a lot of the kids, they're there with their parents more than they are with a teacher. They are with a coach. And so I think the other part of it is to get us back on the right track is that parents have to step up and be accountable as well.
But a change of heart is a gradual process. It doesn't come easy, and violent crime strikes quickly, and in most cases, the results are permanent. So we turn to government to discharge its duty of keeping us safe. And that means police.
We would just humbly ask, pray for our officers and our detectives, because they are the ones that have to intervene and make the apprehensions to bring people to justice, hopefully to a system that we get repaired.
Representing rank-and-file police officers in Indianapolis is Rick Snyder, president of the Fraternal Order of Police, Lodge No. 86.
Every day, on average, our local Indianapolis jail houses 350 state prisoners. That takes up 350 beds.
It's a state requirement. That sometimes doesn't leave enough room for prisoners arrested in Indianapolis and Marion County. So some people, especially the ones who get the automatic cheap bond, get out.
Oftentimes they are then reoffending and victimizing new people in our community, or re-victimizing those that they had perpetrated crimes against already. And so that's a huge problem that we have, and we're hopeful that our Governor Eric Holcomb, will engage on this issue. We need some relief on this mandate.
And that breeds another problem.
We have over 4,000 offenders in Indianapolis who have been released back out onto our streets, into our neighborhoods with GPS ankle bracelet monitors. We have confirmed that we have over 100 of those bracelets being cut off every single month. That's a crime in and of itself to cut off those ankle bracelets. But oftentimes they're doing that because they're then committing a new crime and they don't want to be tracked while they're doing that. Our officers will show up to scenes of crimes, robberies, shootings, stabbings, domestic violence situations, and find cut off ankle bracelets in the area.
Snyder, fed up like many people in Indy, had a proposal for the city county council.
We must have a public discussion about the broken system of catch and release criminal justice in our city. Well, we have proposed the need for some type of legislatively enacted commission, a commission that focuses on criminal justice outcomes.
Long-term and short-term response to violent crime.
You'll now hear arguments for and against the proposed bipartisan commission, which would be on a voluntary basis and cost no tax dollars, as considered by the City County Council Public Safety and Criminal Justice Committee, chaired by Councilor Leroy Robinson, on February 5th.
I'm Indianapolis Council Mallory.
We have had year-over-year record-breaking shootings and homicides.
Councilor Brian Mallory.
2019, sure, we didn't break the homicide record, but we did increase in non-fatal shootings, which attribute that to what you will, but a lot of times it's attributed to poor aim. they set out to try to kill somebody, and they were unsuccessful. We've let this go on and on, and I think it's very clear that the public is supportive of us looking into this at a deeper level.
Paul Babcock, Mayor's Office. The following statement can be attributed to Mayor Joseph Hogsett. While I welcome the opportunity to work with councilors in any way council leadership sees fit, I know that the Public Safety and Criminal Justice Committee can continue to be a valuable forum for continued dialogue and thoughtful solutions.
Salita Scott, I'm here on behalf of Prosecutor Ryan Mears to provide the following statement. We support the leadership of Chairman Robinson in expanding this committee's efforts. We do not see the need of any additional committees.
My name is Michael Mack. I've been a sworn member of the Indianapolis Police Department for 35 years. Let the citizens of Indianapolis know that you have their best interest at heart. Let our young black men who are dying in these streets every day. My first call today was a person shot at Community North Hospital. 22-year-old young man, and he wouldn't talk to us.
You know, that is a short-term solution that you're mentioning too, by adding funding and more cops. What this proposal looks at is a short-term and long-term solution to the issue that we're facing.
Not one time have the word white, Hispanic, Italian, Irish, Polish, German would ever mention.
Councilor William Oliver.
Only black would mention at this table and by one of the speakers associated with crime. So I'm offended by the term associating my race with crime in describing problems in our community.
Councilor Leroy Robinson explains one of the reasons why he was not in favor of forming the commission.
We're looking at the disproportionate rate of arrests, incarceration, adjudication of cases, prosecution of cases, which all ultimately leads to the over-incarceration of poor people and men and women of color, especially young black males, which is why we started this reform effort years ago.
Mr. President, I move that we send proposal number 43 to the full council with a due pass recommendation.
Second.
Most have been properly moved and seconded. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed?
Nay.
Motion fails.
We had a proposal for a commission to bring all the relevant stakeholders around the table to start to fix the gaps in our system and start to combat the violence and push it back. And they rejected it.
Just hours after the commission was voted down, the quadruple murder of four people on the city's far east side, angering Rick Snyder.
Our elected leaders rejected taking action tonight. And within about an hour, we had this occurring. We told them we are in the middle of a crisis, and we begged them to take action, and they refused. On a party line vote, we had a mayor, we had our sheriff, we had our prosecutor. All three sent messengers to the committee meeting to say that they did not believe we needed a commission and that they had full faith and confidence that our public safety committee could handle it. Well, I'm asking you, where's the public safety committee at? Where are they at?
Coming up.
The answer to the problem in one area could very well resolve an issue in another.
How some of the people who wanted the commission deal with the no vote. And why the feds are helping with safe streets. You're listening to Violent Crime in Indianapolis.
When the city has peace, we will all have peace. And so I'm energized and excited about the fact that there's bipartisan support for moving this forward and making sure that the people in the city of Indianapolis and surrounding cities are safe.
When a proposal for a commission to study violent crime in Indianapolis was shot down on February 5th, it didn't stop some of the Republican and Democrat city county councilors and clergy and the Fraternal Order of Police from forming their own volunteer body to hear from people affected by violent crime.
We want to try to have this as a closed community discussion with just stakeholders involved.
The news conference at City Market.
Our hope for this is that we're going to bring people together that have seen successes, that have seen victories in combating this. We are saying now enough is enough, and we want to bring these people that have had successes in their neighborhoods and let us know what they're doing, let other neighborhoods know what they're doing, and we can bounce these ideas off each other and try to create a solution that works for everyone.
But even a community-based summit will likely take a while to show any results.
There's no real silver bullet solution to these problems because they are complex.
Criminal Justice Professor Jeremy Carter with the O'Neill School at IUPUI.
It's that easy, but it's not. Right? There's people keep looking for this, you know, what should we do? And if the answer is not one thing, the answer is many things. And the city's actually engaged in a whole bunch of stuff to reduce gun violence. The problem is I don't know how well those different programs are talking to one another, how aware they are of what each other are doing, and certainly in a way that we can actually evaluate it and figure out what were some of the benefits of these programs.
Carter says violent crime has gone down across the country and in Indianapolis and can back that up with numbers.
Overall, if you were to look at a rolling average, a smoothed average, crime in Indy and in other places is certainly, violent crime generally is trending downward. Now we have these flare-ups and you could, people look at point and cycle type numbers, you know, January to January, but overall, I think people read a little too much into that.
How so? How, you know, is it just because of an emotional reaction to seeing stuff like a quadruple murder?
There's no criminal event that's probably more damaging to a community, certainly than homicide and shootings, aside from the fact that the impact that has, specifically in those communities, it generates this idea of fear and safety and effectiveness of government and all these different things.
And you may be surprised to find out that Indianapolis is not even in the top 10 most dangerous cities in the country. Indianapolis is number 17 on that list.
Detroit, which still unfortunately has the highest violent crime and aggravated assault rate in the country. Memphis, which is the second most violent city in the country, with a violent crime rate five times the national average.
Other cities and others in the Midwest are experiencing violent crime not in surges, but with numbers that are consistently a great deal higher than those in Indy.
Baltimore, the robbery capital of the United States, with the second highest murder rate in the United States.
U.S. Attorney General William Barr during a news conference in December.
Kansas City is in one of the top five most dangerous cities with a murder rate nearly five times the national average. Cleveland is the sixth most violent city with a murder rate 4.5 times the national average. Milwaukee, the seventh most violent city with a violent crime rate four times the national average.
He announced federal help in the form of Operation Relentless Pursuit, which put millions of federal dollars into those cities to help fight the violent crime with new police officers, federal agents, and money for overtime for cops. But Indy did not get that money, partly because we are not in the top 10 most dangerous cities.
We're actually blessed here in Indianapolis to have great resources available to us already through our U.S. Attorney's Office and through Josh Minkler.
It was no surprise to FOP President Rick Snyder that Indianapolis was passed over for that form of federal help.
Unfortunately, our federal partners, they can't just fix our local broken system, but they can definitely make additional resources available, and they have done that.
You'll find out in just a moment what the feds are doing on the streets of Indianapolis. But first, look at a couple of those other big Midwestern cities that have proportionate murder, shooting, and robbery rates that surpass Indianapolis.
And that responsible gun reform is the type of gun reform you've seen in Kansas City in large part already.
Quentin Lucas is mayor of Kansas City, which had 148 homicides last year.
Banning the possession of firearms for domestic violence abusers, which just makes sense. Another important step that we're looking for is a statewide ban on possession of handguns, particularly concealed firearms by minors.
While Indy had 171, the proper population of Kansas City is much smaller, about half that of Indianapolis, even though it's close to the same size metro area. By those numbers, Kansas City is more dangerous.
This level of violence is totally unacceptable at any time. At any time.
Tom Barrett is the mayor of Milwaukee, metro area about the same size as Indianapolis.
But it's a level of violence that we have not seen in the city of Milwaukee in the first quarter of the year since 2000.
The actual population of Milwaukee is two-thirds the population of Indy. Milwaukee had 98 homicides. Similar size cities, fewer murders and homicides, yet they get more federal money because of the smaller proper populations, which makes their murder rate proportionately higher. But they are looking at similar solutions.
What I need to see and what I think is important is that we make sure that felons, that it's a felon for carrying a gun without a permit, and certainly in sentencing that has to be considered. There has to be meaningful disincentives to illegally carry a gun.
For Kansas City's Mayor Lucas, the problem of gun violence could be partially solved by keeping guns out of the hands of kids.
If you're under the age of 18 years old, already in federal law, they say you're not supposed to be carrying guns. There's a gap in Missouri which has led to under-enforcement. It's led to 16-year-olds carrying concealed weapons, and sometimes our police officers wondering what you can do with them.
We believe that if we're going to fight crime, make America safe, we need to put the resources not in Washington, but out in the field.
Former U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions speaking in Indianapolis in 2018. He's talking about a federal operation called Project Safe Neighborhoods.
We've ordered our United States attorneys to target and prioritize prosecutions of the most violent criminals in the most violent neighborhoods.
Federal law is pretty straightforward on gun possession. If you're a drug dealer, you're not allowed to possess a gun. If you're a convicted felon, you're not allowed to possess a gun.
The U.S. Attorney for Indianapolis and Southern Indiana, Josh Minkler.
The advantage of charging these individuals federally are the rules of federal criminal procedure. They are different, much different than the laws in the state of Indiana.
His office has formed a partnership with Indianapolis and Marion County to prosecute gun crimes.
The first tool that we have for a felon with a gun is what is called pre-trial detention.
It is already illegal for felons to have guns federally. That's nothing new, but a more aggressive effort to catch felons, people already convicted of a crime who have gotten a gun after that conviction, may help keep them in jail while state laws cannot.
If you can't prove to a judge that an individual is a serious risk to commit another crime, is a serious risk of danger to the community, that individual will be held without bond, not caught and released, caught and detained by the marshals in custody.
Minkler says the feds don't bargain on violent crime.
We can and we will turn this sadness and reflection into a community call to action. It's never going to be solved by government alone. And it certainly will not be solved by politics.
Mayor Joe Hogsett and the City County Council have made it clear that while the police will enforce the law, the administration is taking a measured approach.
The partnerships that are needed are not just necessarily in law enforcement and in government, but in our communities as well, to be as proactive as we can be.
City County Council President Vop Ossoli.
Public safety is probably one of our highest priorities here. And that's with the administration, it's with the council, it's with our judicial branch.
Ossoli says that while the council is outraged by the surge of violence in the city, he believes in the council's approach to the problem through social justice.
It is recognizing that certain areas of our city, certain communities, I think have been overlooked when it comes to means of eradicating pollution or addressing issues of refuse.
The plan is to allow parts of the community that may not have felt like they have been represented before to build equity and have a part and a say, an approach that is supported by the mayor.
The work to mend those wounds will take place in classrooms, in church basements, as much as it will inside the walls of the city county building.
Coming up,
I will stand there with you.
Your partnership with police.
In both dark times and happy ones.
Just like 46201, violent crime in Indy on 93 WIBC.
I solemnly swear
that I will support the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of Indiana.
And the Constitution of the State of Indiana.
Maybe life is curious to see what you would do. The gift of being left alive.
life. December 31st, 2019.
And that I will faithfully and impartially.
And that I will faithfully and impartially.
Discharge my duties.
Discharge my duties.
A new beginning for the Indianapolis Metro Police Department.
As Chief of Police of the Consolidated City of Indianapolis.
Chief of Police of the Consolidated City of Indianapolis.
Chief Brian Roach retires and Randall Taylor is appointed Chief of Police.
May I present, for the very first time, Chief of Police for the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department, Chief Randy Taylor.
I've spoken to so many families. I've had some moms that have told me, look, I knew he was involved in this stuff. I knew he was involved in drugs, but he was bringing some money in, and that was helping us to survive.
Taylor sees policing as an effort by the department and the community. He wants you to be involved.
I'm looking to hold parents a little more accountable, but get them the help that they need on how to address these things early.
Not by going out and patrolling, but by working with the police to let them know about crime and the possibility of future crimes.
What we're trying to do is make sure we get connected to those people that would commit violence in such a way that they don't want to commit it. So trying to work a little bit more on the heart and the mind as opposed to, you know, just going out and pulling a trigger.
Taylor talking with our partners at Wish TV.
I'm not so naive to think it's something we're going to be able to turn around in a few days or a few weeks, maybe even a year, but that's the goal.
In many ways, the department will operate the way it has for the past few years.
Indianapolis will be able to, for the very first time in a decade, fully utilize community-based beat policing.
You've probably heard the terms beat policing and community policing. Taylor believes in it, just like Chief Roach before him, and just like Mayor Joe Hogsett.
This comprehensive return to beat policing allows us to continue in our effort to stem the tide of violence that began to rise following the abandonment of beat policing in our county in 2012.
You might wonder, what is beat policing?
And basically what that is that you have a officer assigned to a specific area or beat.
Veteran patrol officer Jerome Harris.
So one of the things that we try to gain from that is that the officers get to know the citizens and the citizens get to know the officer. So instead of an officer moving one day work in this area and then the next day work in another area, our supervisor try to keep officers in a specific area. So again, you can start to build those relationships with the citizens that they serve.
If anything is brewing, they might be able to let you know about it?
Absolutely. And so one of the things with the beat policing, if a citizen sees an officer working their shift over and over, day in and day out, I think they'll be more apt and more willing to give information versus someone that they don't know.
Harrison describes it as a partnership. A partnership that not only gets the cops the info they sometimes need from people in the neighborhoods, but also one that builds trust. Harrison says that trust is sometimes sorely needed when there's a shooting or a stabbing and the police need witnesses.
It doesn't just stop there. A lot of times there's retaliation, groups going back and forth. We see the effects after the shooting. Then you get the fights, you get the shots fired, and you get the retaliation between the groups.
That retaliation is often the reason that witnesses won't talk to the police.
There's a real fear out there of retaliation. There's a sense of concern for their own lives and the lives of their family. So when you ask them to participate in the court proceedings, which is open, it's a scary thing for them.
Former IMPD Chief Brian Roach. Under his administration, the city county council allotted more money for the city's witness protection program. So it's at least possible to offer some protection for people who witness violent crimes.
It's not like what we typically think of as witness protection, where you're looking at moving John Gotti from New York out to Arizona or whatever that is in this long-term program. So we're not talking about putting people up for years. It's, is there something we can do in the interim that makes them safe so that they can testify?
But just having the money for the protection doesn't guarantee that people will cooperate, says Chief Taylor.
In some cases, we need someone that's willing to testify.
So, what approach will work in cutting down, if not ending, violent crime on the streets of Indianapolis?
Ironically, in the state of Indiana, you can go buy an AR-15 at 8 18 years of age. But in order to purchase a handgun, you have to be 21. I am a hunter. I am a gun-carrying supporter of the Second Amendment.
For State Senator Greg Taylor, who represents Indy at the State House, part of the answer is controlling the types of weapons young people can buy and the capacity of ammunition.
My bill does not take a gun out of your possession. I carry. I support that and will continue to support that. But if you're going to have a firearm, you need to be responsible, just like we did when we changed the age to driving a car.
Taylor's bill failed in the legislature this year.
The more bullets that you have, and again, coupled with the fact that these multi-trigger adjustments that you can make to a gun causes that bullet to come out and multiple bullets to come out consecutively. That is a safety issue that I think is common sense.
The bill would have made it illegal to sell a gun to anyone under 21. It would also have limited the magazine capacity to 10 rounds, not an answer that the Indiana State Legislature as a whole was looking for in 2020. But some lawmakers were looking at other solutions to help keep young offenders in adult prisons at an earlier age.
It would reduce the minimum age for committing children to adult criminal legal system to 12 years old.
ACLU attorney Katie Blair describing another bill that failed this year, which was meant to allow kids as young as 12 to go to an adult prison.
If you're going to put juveniles into any kind of correctional system, they should be in youth, you know, with youth in the juvenile system and not adult.
Blair says there are many reasons not to put kids in an adult prison with adult offenders.
Their brains aren't fully formed, so they can't be treated the same as adults. They just aren't there developmentally. They are in kind of greater risk of having, violence committed against them. They're at a higher rate of suicide.
She says to keep them safer from adult violence, there's a higher risk of them being put into solitary.
And we know that solitary confinement has a whole host of horrible problems associated with it.
A solution that would have gotten the state sued, and not one the state legislature was ready for this year.
Living just enough for the city.
At the peak of the Great Depression, the unemployment rate was 25%. These areas are depression-like, people struggling. And remember what I said earlier, when we patrol, arrest, and incarcerate, it's not going to help people in these areas. In addition to the arrest and prosecution, we need to start focusing on what we can do beforehand.
Former Indy Police Chief Troy Riggs left to become the Public Safety Commissioner in Denver. Now he speaks to groups like this Criminal Justice Assembly at Wabash College. He's talking about some of the Indy neighborhoods where the most crime happens.
And I will say this is a public safety initiative. I didn't say a police initiative. I said a public safety initiative.
Riggs says property crimes lead to violent crimes. Take, for instance, a family that has scraped up enough money to buy an iPad that gets them connected to the internet.
When that iPad gets stolen, that is just a property crime, another number in the books for the police department. For that family, that is a life-altering event. And we need to be aware of that in public safety as we move forward and try to find ideas and suggestions on how to deal with these challenges.
He says the people who are victimized by violent crimes also include the victim's family and the family of the person who did it.
But the three pillars that I say are essential to public safety to get to the root causes of crime are simply this: financial security, behavioral health, and those left behind.
Riggs says real solutions will come from considering how to deal with every single citizen in a major city like Indianapolis.
And so those left behind, who are they? Are they citizens that are living in our cities and they see all of this building, all the entertainment venues, all the people moving to major cities? Money is growing constantly, tax base is growing constantly, but yet they feel like they're left behind.
Coming up, your duty to the city.
And I think that if people are afraid, that they need to connect themselves with a way to help.
Violent crime in Indianapolis on 93 WIBC.
That's going to require educational reform. It's going to require good poverty programs, access to child care. You know, it's going to require all these things to actually reduce violence in a sustainable, systematic way.
You can live your life in a crowded city.
If people are looking for a quick fix, they might as well relax, because We didn't get here overnight.
You can walk along the crowded street.
This is years of trauma that goes back.
But the city really ain't no bigger.
Heck, if I could push a button or snap my fingers and everything was good, well, I'd be probably really rich because I could go around and do that everywhere across the nation.
The people that you be.
You're listening to Just Like 46201, Violent Crime in Indianapolis.
You might be a sweet.
The problems may not disappear overnight or over a year or several years, and it will likely never go away altogether. But some people are employed to make it better. Shauna Majors, the city's first director of community violence reduction, is one of those people.
We do a group call-in where we call in people that have been identified as high risk for violent offenses or have been arrested already for violent offenses and try to offer them some alternatives such as, you know, employment assistance, job training, counseling, substance abuse counseling, whatever that looks like.
The theory for part of her work is to get kids engaged with something else besides getting into trouble.
To get them into some activity that burns up that time, those extracurricular activities outside of school, perception change, conflict resolution, anger management, all of the things that we've identified that our youth need to limit the time on the phones or playing the video games because they do that all the time. We try to really engage a lot of the kids in the arts, so music, painting, dancing, whatever that is that they like.
In a lonely town, on a lonely street.
Majors says the solution cannot all rest with government, though.
I'd like to see more parental involvement with kids that age.
And a warning about the permanence of murder.
And when I go to talk to kids all the time, I tell them, once you shoot and you kill somebody, you can't hit that reset button like you do on that video game. They're not going to pop back up and regenerate and keep moving. They're gone.
How do we get them, one, to start handling conflicts in a nonviolent way, and then using their talents in a positive way?
Reverend Charles Harrison is with the ND 10-Point Coalition.
We talk about the importance of collaborative partnerships between law enforcement and community and faith-based groups like 10-Point. That is going to be key in addressing the issue of urban violence.
The group meets with people in neighborhoods and leads citizen walks through those neighborhoods, letting the bad guys know that they won't stand for violence.
We just don't focus on the numbers because it's hard to go in a neighborhood and not have any homicide.
It's worked in some neighborhoods that used to be places where shootings and stabbings were common, like Butler Tarkington. Harrison says their methods work, even though they are not the end all.
We don't want to sell that to people that if 10 Point comes to your neighborhood, you won't have any more homicides. This is not true and realistic.
He's met with Governor Holcomb about helping people in neighborhoods all over the state.
From a state perspective, you know, he has all of the state of Indiana. Could we take this model that has done great work in the 46208 zip code in Indianapolis? Could we replicate it in other cities?
And 10 Point has spread with chapters in Gary and Fort Wayne and the beginnings of chapters in Chicago, Cleveland, and other Midwestern cities. The help doesn't have to come from government or the police. They catch the bad guys, and organizations like Voice of the Victim sometimes help the people affected most by violent crime.
I woke up 3 days later in the hospital with 150 staples and stitches and 13 stab wounds.
Renita Hills, who started Voice of the Victim, describing the attack by her ex-husband, which happened in the house with her children.
My daughter was 5 years old. When I got out of the hospital, she told me what happened. She says, Mommy, when you turned around, Daddy got up and he slammed your face into the wall. So I have 4 puncture wounds in my chest, 2 of which punctured both the lungs. I have a stab wound across my back, on my arm and my shoulder, down my back.
It inspired her to start a nonprofit to help victims of violent crime, domestic crime, and sexual assault.
I was so glad to be able to add the training for sexual assault. We have been called out to the hospital to sit with people. And we bring a safety bag or clothing bag with them, because what you don't understand when you're sexually assaulted, you go to the hospital, they take everything, down to your socks, because DNA and evidence are on those clothes. And you get to walk out with some ugly scrubs and hospital socks. with no underwear.
The Indiana Coalition for Crime Victims' Rights is also fighting for several causes to help people affected by violent crime, says President Lael Hill.
We have crime victim compensation through the state of Indiana where victims of crime, but the key is if they cooperate with law enforcement, they can apply for up to $15,000 in compensation.
She says she believes the government can do better than $15,000.
We know we really have to practice good advocacy work so that we can increase crime victim compensation from $15,000 to $25,000 in our state. And then also look at ways that victims have access to compensation without having to cooperate with law enforcement, because in crime, such as gang-related crimes and street crime, they're a little bit nervous of being labeled a snitch, and so oftentimes they don't apply for those funds.
Hill says she also wants to see a state law that police have to read you your rights as a victim, just like they read a perpetrator their Miranda rights.
Well, their right to be confer with the prosecutor, the right to be heard, the right to be present, the right to be notified.
All of the people who are working on solutions end up making for help choices to help reduce violent crime and make life easier for the people affected. And results are happening, even if it is not all at once.
There was a guy that he recognized me and I recognized him. He lived in the Butler-Tarkington area. I arrested him on so many warrants. I remember chasing him at least two or three times.
Officer Jerome Harris.
So several days ago, I ran into him, and even in the conversation, you can tell that his life has changed. He now has a family. He now has kids that he's taking care of.
And what about the projections that Indy will break all records for murders this year? Maybe not, says Professor Jeremy Carter.
Well, we've had this many in January, so it puts us on track for this many in 2020. You know, that's simply not the case. We won't have 300 homicides in Indy this year.
He says Indy still has some work figuring out, though, why many of the programs the city has in place have not been very successful. But the ones that have been have changed people's lives.
So it's good to know that the people that you've interacted with are able to change and is able to redirect their lives for the better. Back here in
46201. You've been listening to Just Like 46201, Violent Crime in Indianapolis. I'm Chris Davis. I gotta find it and try and hang on for a little.